Hey, welcome to the show. My name is Ron Van Dam. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, hello, right?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program today. Merry Thanksgiving. Is that right? Is that the wrong term, phrase, whatever? Sorry. I love having that applause sound effect background. I should use that all over the place. Like when I get up in the morning, you know, and I put my pants on, you know, I would get applause, or I would go to the bathroom and flush the toilet and say, well, there you go. And yes, and then I, thank you. Thank you very much. It was great, wasn't it? Perfectly formed today. Thank you. It is perfectly formed. Thank you very much. Yes, I am empty now. Yes, I'm totally empty. Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you. Okay. But life is not that simple. Well, happy whatever this is to you, Thanksgiving. I don't think this is a religious holiday. I don't think the turkey rose from the dead or anything like that. I think it just was... People just ate turkey here, and this is a holiday where people are supposed to get together and be festive. And you see many of the people that you haven't seen all year, and you look forward to it, and then they show up, and you say to yourself, now I understand why I haven't seen them all year. Why did I have to invite them? For many people, the holidays is more exhausting than it is not. Many people get depressed over the holidays, and I don't know whether it's because there's a loss of family members or a disconnection, or whether you actually come to realize how much you really don't like everybody that you're supposed to like. Ron, you're not supposed to talk about this on Thanksgiving. Okay, then I won't. Family's a very interesting thing. I mean, I happen to love my family, and I'm sure you love yours. But let's face it, you don't choose your family. They kind of plop you there. You know, you don't choose your parents. You don't choose your relatives. You're kind of like placed there. You're dropped into that. It's not, friends are different. Friends are, you seek them out. You have a connection. You have a bond. And where there was nothing before, you didn't know them, they weren't there in front of you, you met them by happenstance, you sought them out, and either you married them, had sex with them, or they became your close friends. Those are special because you chose those to occur, or you allowed them to occur. Family is different. family, there are no choices involved. Plop, there you are. And your parents didn't choose you either. You were a little zygote. Yeah, you're just a zygote, man. They didn't know what you were going to develop into, and you didn't know that they planted you. You had no idea. And then, you know, you come into the life with the family, and all of a sudden you got a surrounded group of people that they didn't choose you. You didn't choose them. So Thanksgiving becomes a very interesting holiday. You have this bond, this maternal, brotherbal bond between family members. But I think it's only because you're so used to them. You've been with them for like every breathing moment of your life. So you kind of just, you know, and there's a lot of supposed to in family stuff. There's a lot of supposed to. I don't want to do it, but I'm supposed to do it. I'm expected to do it. I'm supposed to do it. So there's a lot of supposed to involved. With friends and people that you choose to be with, there aren't too many supposed. There's some supposed tos, but you can also like choose not to. This isn't right for me to talk about on the day of gathering and love. This is a day where we sit around the table with people that we know, and we eat together. We watch Uncle Bob chew his stuffing. Some of it spilling out of his mouth because he can't contain his food in his mouth anymore. Never could. He was always one of the sloppiest eaters you've ever known. And there, sitting across from you at a large meal, is Uncle Bob with the stuff coming out of his mouth, and it's all over his shirt. The food's all over his shirt. The man just can't eat. He should be wearing a bib, but he can't because he's an adult. It's just it's a mess. It's a mess. And then somebody gets into the alcohol. I mean, you know, on purpose. And everything they're saying makes no sense and becomes a bit unfiltered to the point where now you're being insulted, but you can't do anything about it because the guy's sloshed and it's Thanksgiving and he's family, you know. You find out a lot of things at Thanksgiving about the way people really feel when they have a little bit of alcohol in them. It's an interesting holiday. I mean, I think for most people, when the holiday's finished and everybody goes home, I think the overwhelming response is, oh, thank God that's over. Very few people, I guess cheerleaders, very few people say, oh, I wish they could stay forever. Nobody says, I wish you could stay and live with me forever. I can't believe Thanksgiving is over and everybody's leaving. I wish they could stay forever. No. And then there's something in Turkey called tryptophan, which I believe should be outlawed. And that just makes you a little bit tired. And unfortunately, the tryptophan with me kicks in when everybody's still in my house. I would love to have a gigantic buzzer system in my home. And when I've had enough and I'm getting a little tryptophan sleepy and I've just had enough of this Thanksgiving visitation thing, you hit the buzzer, it goes off, and everybody must vacate your house immediately or your apartment. Like, get out. The host is tired. He's had enough. She's had enough. Get out of the place now. Grab your coat. Go home. You know those little welcome mats that say, welcome to my humble home, or welcome, those mats, you know, where you're supposed to, that I don't treat them as a welcome mat. I treat them as something that you can wipe the crud off the bottom of your shoe upon. That's what they're there for. That's what they're there for. They're not to welcome people into your house. They're to make sure that those people don't bring all the crud from the street onto your floors. That's what the welcome mat is for. My welcome mat should be tailored to say, welcome for a limited period of time. That's what my welcome mat should say. Hey, maybe I'll go into the online business of tailor-made, custom-made welcome mats, where the people that show up on your doorstep aren't entirely welcome. I think that would be adorable and very, very honest as well. You think that's a good idea? Oh, you don't like that. I thought you might, but I was wrong. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I do wish you a very happy Merry Thanksgiving. I still don't even know what the proper terminology for that stuff is. All I know is I got my pants on.
Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show is like realizing that you put your underwear on backwards this morning. It's wrong, but it doesn't feel bad, and it's not like anyone's ever gonna find out, so just go with it. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
I love that music. I love all music, except for rap. I can't stand rap. I'm not into it. Not into it. Did I, just for fun here, I did an interview about 2 weeks ago, and I misunderstood, when I do the interview, we do these over the phone usually, and the producer from the guest calls the station here, and the person says, we have your guest on the line, Ron, we're going to connect you now, and I say thank you very much, and I do the interview. This lady had an accent, and I thought she said something different than what I thought. This was an interview about Amazon's choice for best books of 2017, but I thought that this producer said something else. Here's what I thought she said. New England Broadcasting.
Hi, may I speak to Ron, please?
Yes, you can. It's me.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm good.
Pamela, and I have Sarah Harrison-Smith for you this morning, talking about Best Books 2017.
All right, I got it.
Great. For how long do you think you'll have her?
How long do I think I'll have her? It shouldn't take me more than a couple of seconds. I thought you said best boobs, not best books, and that shook me for the entire interview. I was thinking, well, maybe this is one of the most interesting interviews I'll ever do on radio. Speaking of that, my goodness, what happened? All of a sudden, everybody's being accused of some type of sexual harassment. And I say, fantastic. It's about time that men understood that just because you're a man and you might hold a certain position, that doesn't give you a license to go touching people in a sexual manner. Really at all. You don't touch someone unless you know that it's welcome. But in a sexual harassment, that's one thing. But to actually do groping, that's something else. And we start all of this at the top of the ladder. And I don't care what anybody says. Listen to me. The President of the United States was in a bus, you know about this story, when he was running for president. And he was saying to Billy Bush, which is an amazing coincidence that that was the guy's name. He was saying that, yes, as Donald Trump, he can get any pussy anytime he wants. And he said the word pussy, and people might even be angry at me now for even saying that. But he said it. He's your president, and he's walking around saying pussy in a bus. I mean, not pussy in a bus, but pussy in a bus. And saying that he can get any woman he wants because he's Donald Trump and he's seen these women walking around and he'd like to do this to them and do that to them. This is a guy you nominated for President of the United States and he actually got into the job. So I'm just disgusted by that to begin with. This man, the president, should not be commenting on sexual harassment at all because he is, again, a poster child for it. There are so many allegations now of sexual harassment that we are now putting them in various categories, and I believe that we should. We should first say that all sexual harassment is wrong. It's all wrong. Now we should say that there are different degrees of it. There is the worst degree, Bill Cosby. That's criminal, worst degree. That's bad. That is rape. Then we get down to what I believe is next down the line, which is the Roy Moore situation. Roy Moore is running for a Senate position out of the great state of Alabama. He's a Republican. He's cantankerous, an honoree. And a good number of women have said that they were sexually harassed and actually groped by this man and asked to perform various embarrassing acts in front of him, including him being jumping on one of these women. Here's the twist to this one, why this is so bad. The accusers say that they were at the time 14, 15 years old, underaged, not legal, underage. That's a sick thing. That's what we call pedophile. Now, Roy Moore says this didn't happen. All these women are liars. They were set up by the Democrats to get him, to make him lose the election. So he's not bowing out of the election. He's going full guns. And he just recently announced that he's going to be suing every one of their asses for making these accusations against him. Roy Moore did say that in cases where he may have talked to or dated or been with a woman underage, that he asked the permission of her parents. So, I mean, are you admitting that you didn't do it, or are you admitting that you did do it? I don't understand what you're doing, Mr. Moore. And today's revelation, which is most interesting, guess who is on the side of Roy Moore and not on the side of the accusers? President Donald Trump. He said in the Rose Garden just yesterday that he says Roy Moore emphatically says that all these accusations are lies, so I'm believing Roy Moore. And besides, if you don't have Roy Moore in the Senate, then a Democrat will get in. And a reporter said to Donald Trump at that point, you would rather have a child molester, pedophile on Capitol Hill than you would a Democrat? And Trump actually said, well, I'm not saying he's a child molester, but yes. How does this man stay in the White House? How do you put up with this as an American citizen? Charlie Rose, who is on CBS and PBS, CBS Morning News, does specials, has been on the Charlie Moore Show on PBS for decades and decades. Suspended by CBS and PBS 2 days ago, fired by CBS and PBS just today. Charlie Rose is no more. The head of Pixar, also accused of sexual misconduct. As you know, Senator Al Franken, a Democrat from Minnesota, accused, but not of rape. Not of touching a woman in her private crotchy area, but kissing. Still bad, still disrespectful, still unwanted advance, invasive, physically invasive by kissing somebody, but different than child molestation and rape. This all is not excusable. At all. Women should not be treated in that manner, especially when there's a man in power and a woman wants to advance in her life, and she must be told that she must do certain things in order to get that advancement. That's all. I think that's all going to stop. I really think that all this coming out with all these different people, it's all going to stop, and I'm glad this all came out. But I do think we have to know the difference between harassment and molestation. Dr. Larry Nassar was the USA Gymnastics doctor for the USA Olympic Gymnastics Organization. A gymnast has come out, a female gymnast, saying the doctor inappropriately groped me during examinations. This is going in the direction of a problem that is now starting to surface, and thank God. Because you can't do this. And let me tell you something. I know a lot of men. I'm a man myself, believe it or not. And to my knowledge, everybody that I know or I associate with doesn't do that. Men do not, because they're men, feel like they can touch women anytime they want, in any way they want. That is not a man. That is an ogre. And that is somebody that was either brought up incorrectly by their parents or just doesn't get it or is a little power hungry or very power hungry. Power is what makes people do this. Power is what makes a man cross that line. Most men, the majority of men, are good, respectful people who ask before they go in that direction at all. Okay, that's all I have to say about that. Let's move on, ladies and gentlemen, if I may. By the way, we thank purpleplanet.com for contributing music for upcoming segment here. By the way, are you having a holiday party this year? Here's a great idea for a holiday party.
Do you throw boring parties? Do your guests stand about with tepid drinks in their hands, vapidly striving for anything interesting to say to anyone? Do they glance at their watches around 9 p.m. and say, "Oh, look at the time"? Your parties need something, and you know it. Your parties need me, Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. For a gentlemanly, prearranged fee, I will arrive fashionably late to your party, bringing with me that dash of irresistible British charm and a soupçon of the joie de vivre of the French. Soon I'll have your guests regaled with stories of my vacation villa in Saint-Tropez, my zany youthful adventures in boys' school, and that one time I met the prince. Quite a story. For an extra fee, I could be the cheeky one, telling blue jokes and winking roguishly at all the girls. Got a piano? I've got a repertoire. Because what English gent can't just sit down at the Ivories and knock out everything from a raucous pub tune to a bit of Gershwin? I know I can. Because I'm Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. And I'll see you at your next party. What time shall I arrive?
I watched the National Dog Show on Thanksgiving Day. National Dog Show is, like the Westminster Dog Kennel Club thing. You watch dogs being paraded around. And you know what? It's adorable, and you get to see all different breeds of dogs that are all poofed up and fancy. There comes a point. This is like a dog beauty pageant. And there comes a point where, if you really think about it, you have to look at the TV screen and say to yourself, what the hell's going on here? We're taking these animals and we're bringing them to the beauty parlor. We're bleaching their hair. We're puffing them up with groomers and we're making them look perfect. Then we put them on very short leashes and we let them prance around. And some kind of judge stands there and opens their mouth and looks at their teeth and checks out their private parts and if they're standing up straight and how proper they are. And then they grade them accordingly. Wow. This is like sick in a way. I don't know why. And then even dog lovers find this to be very exciting. I think it's a little cruel. I just think it's a little cruel to... It's not pampering your pet. It's using them as money-making devices, and it's like putting lipstick on a four-year-old girl and parading her on stage. It's just odd. It just bothers me. I don't think any living thing should be paraded around for financial gain or so you can stick a blue ribbon on it and then throw it back in the cage. I don't understand that. I never understood having a bird as a pet. And excuse me if you have a bird in a cage in your house as a pet. Excuse me, maybe I don't understand entirely. But to take a bird and to have it sit on a perch in a cage that is no larger than 8 inches by 8 inches by 10 inches high is, to me, cruel. Taking a living thing and putting it in a confined cage.
Ron, you don't understand. Sometimes I'll open up the cage door and the bird can fly around the living room.
Oh, what are you, Lincoln? I mean, that's great. How nice you are. Birds fly, man. They should be allowed to fly all the time. Having a bird as a pet is a little odd. That's like saying, I have like a 3-year-old child. Oh, that's great. Does a child have its own nursery? No, we keep it in a cage in the basement. We let it out every once in a while. What are you doing? The kids are supposed to run around. You can't leave them in cages. As a matter of fact, that's illegal. So I get the same thing in tiny little aquariums. You know, here's a fish. Fish love to swim. That's what they do. They move around. They swim. So we take a fish. You can't touch the fish. You can't pet the fish. You can't kiss the fish. The fish don't sit in your lap. You can't talk to the fish. The fish don't talk to you. The fish doesn't watch television. You can't take the fish for a walk on a leash. The fish is just a fish sitting in a fishbowl with nowhere to swim. That should be illegal. That's like cruel.
Ron, it's just a fish. Don't just a fish me.
It's cruel. It's just cruel. I don't understand all that stuff. See, that's my problem. I overthink everything. Not that it's a bad thing. But while you're just sitting there watching a fish in a water bowl, I'm saying to myself, what about the poor fucking fish? What about the bird that can't fly anymore because you got it in a steel cage? What's up with that? Is that love and understanding? No, that's for your own benefit so you can look at the pretty bird. It doesn't do anything for the bird.
Oh, no, Ron, you don't understand. The bird loves me.
Yeah, yeah, the bird loves you. Yeah, yeah, the bird loves you. Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, the bird sits on my shoulder and then kisses me.
Yeah, that's what the bird's doing. That's exactly what the bird's doing. Yeah, you got that down. That's exactly what's happening with the damn bird. All right. David Barclay Moore joins us now. He's an author. He's written a very interesting book that you wouldn't expect him to write necessarily. Let's speak to him now. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very, very well. We're talking about your book, The Stars Beneath Our Feet, which is an interesting, a realistic portrait of life for young people of color who are living on the edge of poverty. Did you come from poverty yourself?
You know, I did not. I was raised kind of blue collar, right. I guess, you know, in Missouri. Actually, not too far from Ferguson, Missouri, about 10 miles.
Yeah.
But fairly middle class family. You know, we went camping and had a pop up tent and a pop up camper rather, and a boat and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, had two parents in the home and three older siblings. Right. So it was, mm-hmm. it was a fairly normal American upbringing.
Yep.
But I have lived in New York. You know, I was born and raised in Missouri, but I've lived in New York City for about 22 years and worked in Harlem for about 8 years. So, and worked with people on the poverty line in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So you were able you're able to gather information and compassion for that situation, and you laced it into a novel. How did that happen?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, I worked for about 8 years for Harlem Children's Zone, which is a large anti-poverty organization based in New York City, specifically based in Harlem. And it's an anti-poverty org that deals with people on the edge of poverty, particularly kids and their families trying to break the cycle of poverty.
Right.
And so I worked there for 8 years in communications as a communications person. And basically, that was kind of my education for a lot of the issues that pop up in the book, right? You know, I got a chance to experience a lot of the challenges that people in Harlem living in poverty experienced. And I also taught a little bit at a middle school in Harlem for like a semester, and got a chance to experience a lot of those those kind of difficulties firsthand.
Are you still in the Harlem area?
No, I live in Brooklyn, which I think is legally required if you're a writer nowadays.
Yes,
you have to live in Brooklyn.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's to be Brooklyn Heights, by the way. I don't know if you're familiar, but you should be there.
Oh, I might be in violation right now. I live in Fort Greene area.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. Well, on your second book, you got to move. That's the law. So, all right. Well, you know, you're a New Yorker. Let's face it at this point. You know, once you're in baked enough. Interestingly enough, Harlem has changed incredibly over the years.
Oh, yeah. It's changed a lot. I mean, as I said, I used to live in Harlem. That was one of the first neighborhoods I lived in New York City. And I remember, you know, I had a two-bedroom in Harlem, and back in the 90s, the late 90s, and it was hard to get people to come up to, you know, when I wanted to rent out my second bedroom.
Right.
You know, people wouldn't come. Once they found out I lived in Harlem, they'd go, oh, no, it's too dangerous, you know.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, you cannot keep people out of Harlem. You know,
it's crazy.
You know, it's like the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
And but it's gentrified, and there's a lot of prosperity in Harlem, but there still is that segment that is struggling.
Certainly.
And you know, just still trying to overcome a lot of obstacles.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, not only overcoming social obstacles, but certainly the poverty is interesting, because if it was unaffordable to live in New York before, it's really unaffordable to live in New York now. So that's it's a problem. All right. So fictional characters were created in order to tell these stories.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, my central character, my protagonist, is a 12-year-old African American boy named Lolly Rockpaw, and his mother and father are of Trinidadian descent, but he's he was born and raised in Harlem. And when we first encounter Lolly walking down 125th Street in Harlem, which is the main drag, he is extremely angry and sad, actually in a type of depression.
Yes.
Due to the loss of his older brother Jermaine, who was recently murdered, actually in gun violence.
Right.
And so one of the ways that Lolly processes that grief and anger is through creativity. He kind of eventually, you know, discovers that. And he navigates his issues in a very positive way by building, particularly building with, with Legos, and which is a type of art. You know, art has the ability to heal, as we all know. And through his relationship with another friend, they actually build a small Lego city at their community center,
which
built up a small room, actually, just kind of these small things. And that the process of that, of doing that and interacting with one another, is what helps them into a positive direction.
That's so interesting.
He's also not only is Lolly dealing with the death of his brother, but he's also being challenged by older boys in the neighborhood who are trying to force him to join a gang.
So, which is, you know, I wouldn't say there's a message to the book, but what do you hope that people will get out of it?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot packed into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was writing it, I was a little, first I wasn't sure if there was too much packed into it, you know, but from what I've heard from people, they think it is wrapped up fairly well. So, you know, knock on wood.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from working with those populations, you know, one of the things that I realized is that their stories aren't really heard by on a large level.
It's
kind of unheard voice.
You're right.
And so I wanted, and they often don't see themselves reflected in society, you know. And it's gotten a lot better, you know, than, say, like 20 years ago.
Right.
You know, you see a lot much more diversity, but it's still not where it should be. And so that's one thing, is those populations that I live beside and worked with, I wanted their voices to be heard. And then secondly, just people who don't live in that type of life, right, who are outside of that existence, is alien to them, it's important that we understand that, you know, just so we can all kind of get along.
Right.
Better. You know, if you don't live in Harlem in public housing, you know, it's beneficial for you and your kids to kind of understand what those people go through, the challenges.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. I've traveled a little bit, and until you go to other countries and see people in other situations,
yeah,
you kind of don't really get it. You kind of don't really understand. You have to be there and kind of live it to say to yourself, oh, my God, now I get it. So the book is important in that sense. Let me ask you quickly, that was your first book. Sometimes characters take on their own lives and they compel an author to throw them into a second book and to continue their characters. And others say, okay, I'm moving on to something else now. Where do you sit in that?
That's a good question. I don't know how to answer. Well, I guess I should. So I'm working on a second novel right now, mm-hmm. another middle grade novel, which is a completely different story than the Stars. It's okay. A different character, different situation, deals with some STEM things. And I will say one of the characters from The Stars Beneath Our Feet has a cameo in that book.
Okay. Wow.
I'm also working on it.
You kind of did the best of both worlds there, didn't you?
I hope I did. I hope I did. But I will say, too, that I am also working on a Superman graphic novel for DC, which is a very different take on Superman, and also writing the screenplay for the Stars Beneath Our Feet, which is going to be made to a film.
Wow, man, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Wow. The Stars Beneath Our Feet, pick it up, take a look. It's Amazon, I assume, and everywhere else. David Barclay Moore, you'll hear the name, I'm sure, in the future. Thank you so much for speaking to us today.
Thank you, Ron. I really appreciate it.
Great. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been adorable through this whole thing. You've been great through this whole moral exercise. And I thank you. I wish you the happiest of whatever holiday you think this is. And the tolerance to make it through. I hope you have a great time. I'll be with you again on Friday. Tori Lagarde will be joining me. Until then, I wish you peace.